From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. The second hour of the Friday edition is here. With Paul Kuharski in Brentwood, Jonathan Hutton with you in Murfreesboro. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Chad Withrow back with us next week after furlough this week. Every Friday to kick off the 11 o'clock hour, Clay Travis joins us, presented by the Home Loan Expert and thehomeloanexpert.com. Clay with Outkick and Fox Sports Radio. Clay, good morning, man. Hope you're doing well.
Doing well. How are y'all?
Doing great. I want to start with a topic that you approached this morning about 25% of fans allowed in an NFL stadium this coming season. But let's, for instance, throw out the scenario that in some big cases, you have a very large contingency of season ticket holders who have already paid certain premiums or payments this offseason to get in the door. How do you determine the 25% of your fan base that actually is allowed through the gate to begin with? What would you do?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. And I think it's one that I just wrote about on Outkick. The question of whether or not football will be played seems to have pretty much been answered. Now, there was a debate that went on for a couple of months. Oh, are we going to play football? That was the number one question that most people had, honestly, in my audience, as soon as the NBA shut down and the NCAA tournament didn't happen and everything else. A lot of people automatically jumped to what's going to happen with the NFL and college football. And I believe we basically answered that question. There is going to be college football and there is going to be the NFL in some way. That's kind of a binary, right? You can either be yes or no on whether there's going to be football this fall. And I believe the answer is yes. The more complicated question is, will there be fans present? And that's a yes or no in some way. But then once, let's say you say yes, then the question becomes, okay, what does that look like? And that gets very complicated very quickly. For instance, I am a season ticket holder, but if social distancing is required, then let's say you can only get 25% of the seats that are filled. And I don't know what the percentages would be, but let's just say 25% because it's relatively easy. Well, I think the super rich are going to get in. Luxury suites are going to be allowed. I would be stunned beyond belief if they aren't. Why are they going to allow them? Well, they're going to say luxury suites have walls. They have their own bathroom. They can privately feed people. You don't have to go stand in line for anything. And you're sort of socially distanced by nature with space, by and large, which is what you're paying for in the luxury suite. So I would bet luxury suites will be open. That's a huge portion of the revenue. Paul may know. I would guess probably on a random Sunday that 25%, this is a guess, that 25% of the overall revenue in a football stadium is coming from what luxury suites cost. Again, that's a guess. I don't know for sure. But that wouldn't surprise me, and I would guess the percentages are similar, depending on how many suites there are at stadiums all over the country. But then what do you do? I'm a season ticket holder. Do I get access to only 2.5 games out of the 10? You know, I think they're probably not going to have crowds for preseason, so let's knock it down to 8. Do I only get to go to 2 games? How do you deal with some of the complexities of social distancing when I go with my kids? Does it really make sense that I would need to socially distance from my kids when we're riding in the car to the game together, when we're living in the house together? You can see all of these complexities that arise. And the whole question that I put up was, would you pay 4 times as much for tickets if you knew that would allow you to get into every game? Do you refund all the season ticket holders and just say, hey, only 25% can attend games, but you're going to charge 4 times as much to try to make up for the revenue that you're losing? Because keep in mind, right now there hasn't been any suggestion that Ryan Tannehill is going to make less than $30 million a year, that Derrick Henry is going to make less than $10 million a year. So if I own a team, I'm trying to maximize my revenue because otherwise that's money that's coming out of my pocket that I'm losing. So these are fascinating and difficult questions that, frankly, are without precedent right now. But I think they're the kind of questions that need to be debated and talked about amongst fans as you contemplate what the season might look like in a Nissan Stadium setting.
Where do you put the PR in this, Clay? Because the league already takes a pretty good hit over cost. And I know you're going to charge what people will pay and all of that. But you hear over and over, you know, hey, the cost of me taking my family of four to a pro football game is pretty exorbitant. I'm only able to go to a game a year, or I can't go to a game a year. Now, if you're a season ticket holder who's been paying it for, you know, 10 years or since 99, and they choose to say, hey, we'll take the people who can pay four times what the cost of the ticket is, I think the backlash would be pretty strong, and you'd be good because you've got the money for it. But the people who maybe are already straining to pay that season ticket cost, the revolt would be pretty strong. Where do you balance the PR hit versus the making the money to pay the Ryan Tannehill cost?
It's a great question, and I don't think it's an easy question. So my first position is, if you told me, Clay Travis, you are in charge of figuring out what the NFL is going to do with fans, I think luxury suites is easy. Would you guys both agree that luxury suites, you're probably going to be able to get those guys in?
I think they're going to have to reduce the number of people in the suite is what I've read. You know, Atlanta put out a plan that I think pissed off the league, but kind of spelled out what the Falcons would do. And I think it included open luxury suites, but with fewer people in them.
I also wonder with this discussion, if they make a rule, let's say they limit the number of fans, which we expect them to do. If they make a rule much like they did with opening the facilities, where you can have, what was it, Paul, 50% of the facilities open or 75 total people. So if it's 25% of your stadium or a certain amount, a certain number thousand of people, instead of just saying sections of the stadium, it's an actual physical person coming through the gate. I think that would also hurt that.
Yeah, well, the luxury suites, the argument I would make is, because you've got your own food and you've got your own walls inside of there and you've got your own bathroom, arguably you could say that those people are interacting less with everybody else in a stadium. They've got their own entrance with the elevators. You can make that argument as well. And I think they're going to find a way to do that because I think the revenue is so substantial. Those are the people that they're going to try to keep the most happy. The way that I would spin it, Paul, is if the NFL was conducting me here, I would say, look, we know 39 million people-ish have lost their jobs. A lot of people who have NFL season tickets have told us that they want to keep their season tickets, but they can't afford to keep them right now. We know we're in unprecedented and uncharted waters when it comes to the financial status of many people around the country. Therefore, we are going to refund every single dollar for season ticket holders for this season. And then for the season ticket holders who have the money and want to do it, we are going to charge them four times what usually we would charge. And if they want to pay that, those are the people who we're going to allow to come into the stadium. That to me seems like, if you present it well, and I'm not saying Roger Goodell is going to be capable of presenting it well, but that to me seems like a decent way to present it, because I'm a season ticket holder, and you're right, I'm in a decent financial position where I can afford to cut that check for my season tickets and not need to worry about it. But I bet there's a lot of season ticket holders for the Titans out there, or the University of Tennessee for that matter, who are listening to us right now, and they're thinking to themselves, boy, you know, I could really use that extra couple of $1,000 that I was spending on tickets right now if I could get it refunded to me by the team. I'd rather have that money and I'll stay home and I'll watch the games on television. I think there's probably a lot of people in that position right now who don't necessarily want to publicly advertise the fact that they're struggling financially, maybe in a way that they haven't before. This would allow them to get their money back. They can then say, well, I'm not paying for it. They can puff their chest out and say, like, well, they think they're crazy if they're going to get me to pay four times as much money to go to a game. But it kind of gives them an opportunity to vent while at the same time they're kind of excited that they got their money back, but they don't have to, they can pretend that they're angry about it, but really it's sort of a false anger as opposed to a real anger. I think that's probably a viable position, you know, in general.
Clay Travis with us from Outkick the Coverage. Coming up, we'll discuss Vanderbilt naming Candace Story Lee the permanent AD, which we expected, but what that signals. And also Joe Rogan and the deal with Spotify and what that signals. But first, Clay, tell us about the Home Loan Expert.
Home Loan Expert, we just talked about financial considerations. And one of the few things that that's going well that is a big expense for a lot of people is go ahead and hop in right now to a 15- or 30-year rate that is insanely low in terms of its overall cost. 15- or 30-year rates will be able to save you hundreds, if not thousands of dollars right now. Put some financial muscle back into your wallet, back into your budget. TheHomeLoanExpert.com. It can take as little as 5 minutes, and you can save hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. Mortgage rates have never been lower. You're probably paying a high rate, too high of a rate, if you haven't refied or taken out a mortgage, a new one, in the last year or so. Check it out, TheHomeLoanExpert.com.
This is your official home of the Titans. 104.5, The Zone.
Zach! Touchdown! Tight Derrick Henry, 74 yards to Pater.
Isaiah Wilson, Derrick Henry, and A.J. Brown play here on the home of the Titans. 104.5, The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Clay Travis with us as we continue our conversation. He's presented by the Home Loan Expert, thehomeloanexpert.com.
Clay, Candace Story Lee installed now as the permanent AD, not interim. Seems a lot of the institutional change that needs to happen at Vanderbilt needs to happen with the people above her to allow her to do it. But what are you expecting with somebody from in-house at Vanderbilt in terms of any potential for real change?
I don't know about change, but I know that David Williams wanted her to be his successor. And I would imagine that he would be ecstatic if he were still with us and was finding out about her getting this job. I think the challenge at Vanderbilt in general is a challenge that has existed at Vanderbilt for a very long time, which is athletics are a relatively small part of how Vanderbilt sees itself reflected in society. And I think you have to give credit to Tim Corbin and Vanderbilt baseball because they've just taken Vanderbilt baseball to a level that, frankly, no Vanderbilt sports program that I'm aware of has ever attained in the history of the school. But so far, he has been the exception rather than the rule in terms of being able to sustain long-lasting athletic excellence at Vanderbilt. And, you know, I've said this for a long time before, I think on your show, Vanderbilt is – look, I'm a double alum, so I've got two graduate degrees from Vanderbilt. I love the place. I'd be ecstatic if my kids went there. But I don't think most Vanderbilt fans expect, really, in their heart of hearts, to be legitimate contenders in most SEC sports. I think they would like to be, but I don't think they ever expect to be. And I don't really see anything changing in terms of Vanderbilt committing to facilities in a way that's going to change that. I do think they should be better in basketball. I think football is always going to be a struggle. But I believe in general, the model should be Stanford, right? Where you're trying to excel and have a great deal of excellence across all sports as a part of having a full and thorough academic experience. That's who I'd be looking to if I were Vanderbilt right now. The difference is the Pac-12 schools are not the SEC. You know, Stanford is the best school in the Pac-12, but there are other institutions in the Pac-12 that are at least somewhat similar to Stanford. There are none that are remotely similar, really, to Vanderbilt in the SEC. And as long as you're the only private school in a conference of athletic behemoths, you're always going to be a little bit the odd man out.
Clay, Joe Rogan signs the $100 million contract with Spotify for his podcast distribution. His entire podcast library, dating back 11 years, now goes to Spotify as well as all future shows. And now with podcasts, Spotify doesn't have to pay a third party. They now have exclusive contracts with talent. They have their own programming. It's actually making money off of each listen, off of the ads. And if you go by what Rogan put out there, that his podcast recently surpassed, what, 150 million downloads. By the way they charge, they can make $3 million per month, reportedly, off of the podcast alone. What do you make of the deal? And is it now Spotify and Apple and everyone else in the podcast world?
Well, look, we're in, that's basically just the audio business, right? Everybody is in the audio business now. And I like to see as much money spent in the audio business as possible. I have been of the opinion, and I think I was even saying this back when I was on 3HL, that you could easily see the trajectory in which we were headed, which is you will get in your car if you're not already doing it, and you will say, play the Midday 180. Or you will get in your car and you will say, play Clay Travis or play Outkick or play Joe Rogan or play Howard Stern or whoever it is. And it won't really matter what time of the day you're in your car. And by the way, I think it'll be any listening device, right? You're going for a jog. That's really what a podcast is. But I think we're not very far away from when you're just able to orally say, give me the latest, whatever it is. And it just shows up and you start listening to it without even having to click anything, right? And then the distribution mechanisms become less significant. I think what you're starting to see, and I wonder whether this is going to happen, is whether we're going to see like a premium cable-like model for the podcast universe where, you know, you go to Spotify and you have to be a member in order to get access to everything that Joe Rogan does. And I don't know whether that's going to happen. But to me, it's sort of akin to what happened when Howard Stern went to satellite radio. Satellite radio gave Howard Stern a massive amount to basically be the linchpin of why people were going to get satellite radio. And I think you're going to see, you know, kind of what I already see, right? I sit down and do a show called Outkick the Show, me sitting in front of Facebook and Periscope, and I've been doing it for years, pretty much every day around 2 or 2:30, right? That show that I do, and I probably shouldn't even say this, but I will, that show that I do, Outkick the Show, I make more money off of that than I do off of the television show that I do on FS1. And I think that stuns a lot of people. There, it's like a holy crap moment. But if you think about it, there's zero cost, basically, associated with me sitting down in front of Periscope and Facebook and going live and being able to talk directly to my audience. When you think about me going through a television studio, they got to reroute that all the way back through LA. They got to spend God knows how much on my home television studio. Like, I'm a small part of the business that is the Lock It In television show. I'm the entirety of the business that is me sitting down in front of Periscope and Facebook. And so I think there are a lot of people out there that are going to recognize that there are opportunities for them to monetize their content without needing to have millions of people consuming it. Certainly for somebody like Joe Rogan, props to him for creating an audience that's that monstrous and that massive for what he does. But if you just go look at my Twitter feed right now, and pretty much every video I put up does 20 or 25,000 views, and some of them do 100,000 views, and that's just in Twitter. Well, that's valuable, right? Being able to produce an audience like that. So I think there are a lot of fascinating opportunities out there, and I think the distribution costs are close to moving to zero for much content, both audio and video.
Are you betting Tiger and Peyton or Phil and Brady this weekend?
I'm going Tiger. I think he lost last time to Phil, right? We're about to talk about this on Lock It in 20 minutes, interestingly, at noon, I guess, in 30 minutes. We're going to make our gambling picks, and that video will be up here digitally shortly. But I'm going on Tiger Woods. I don't think he'll lose to Phil again. I like Peyton as being a little bit better than Brady, so I think Tiger will find a way to get it done.
Appreciate you, man. Always great catching up, and we'll chat next week. Enjoy the weekend.
Hey, appreciate y'all having me. Thanks a lot.